Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I talked to Ritzy from The Joy Formidable. And it's delightful. I'm aware that I say a lot of these talks are going to be delightful, but they really are. I'm recording this intro literally just as I've just sort of hung up the Zoom call with Ritzy, and it was wonderful. She was, yeah, absolutely delightful, as you're about to find out. Before we get on with that chat, a few thank yous. Thank you to 76 for producing. Thank you to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. Thank you to you lot as we're eking out of lockdown. I look forward to hopefully being back face-to-face with some more people and doing interviews that way. But just a massive thanks for your support throughout all of this time where I've been recording over Zoom Yeah, and thanks to 76, because sometimes Wi-Fi drops out, sometimes these things get glitchy, and he's been consistently ensuring that the podcasts that you listen to are as close to what you'd expect from a pre-lockdown podcast. So, yeah, so thanks to him, and just thanks to you for constantly being so lovely and supportive and saying nice things on the socials and sharing it. And yeah, it's just been, yeah, a lovely thing to see this podcast reach so many nice people. Okay. Right. If you'd like to support the podcast in any other way, then you can do that on Patreon for 79p a month. And that's Patreon, patreon.com/ Off the Beat and Track. And over there, I put up video episodes, put up radio shows, put upfront episodes out over there. I think there's probably about 200 shows you can get stuck into over there that hadn't had a lot of general release like this one. So go and explore the Patreon. Go and explore everything you need to know about this website. Is it your one-stop shop, which is www.offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Should we get on with it? Okay, let's do that then. Please enjoy Off the Beat and Track podcast with the wonderful Ritzy of The Joy Formidable. Right, I've got to take a quick break in this podcast because I've got some super exciting news. Off the Beat and Track podcast is proud to go into partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. That's right. The Cacao Bar is not a chocolate bar. It's all the best bits of a chocolate bar put into a really exciting new alcoholic range. That's right. Gin, vodka, and a beautiful range of cream liqueurs. So one of the big bonuses of this partnership is obviously I'm super thrilled to have Hotel Chocolat working with us, but they sent me a great big box of this stuff. And I'm telling you, it's amazing. Go and check it out. www.hotelchocolat.com or over on the socials at Hotel Chocolat. But yeah, in the coming months, there's going to be opportunities for you to get involved with competitions with us, to win bottles of stuff. There's loads of exciting things coming soon, and I can't be more happy to say that this podcast is in partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. All right, let's get back to the podcast. It's Off the Beat and Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin. Okay, we're recording. Ritzy, hello.
Hi, how you doing?
How you doing?
Oh, I'm well, thank you. Doing good.
Good. Where are you?
I'm in southern Utah. Today, I've been here for, well, I bought a house here about 8 years ago. And I used it as a, it's been used as a studio in the past, and it's been used as a place to kind of, you know, in between tours, go and do some writing. It's in a really beautiful part of the world, you know, so I'm very lucky, nice place to come and
reflect. This meeting is being recorded.
I've ended up being here. I was only meant to be here for a couple of months just after we'd started demoing the new album, but it's turned into about 18, turned into about 18 months now. I can't, you know, we've been here a really long time. So because of obviously all the travel restrictions and things like that and making choices about coming back to Wales. So
Let's touch on that quickly, and before we get on to your song choices, looking back over the last, it's been 15, 16 months in the UK, I imagine it's not been too different where you are. How have you found it, both personally and creatively?
I think at the very beginning, obviously, like a lot of people, it felt kind of quite, you know, like I felt like the bottom was falling out of things in a way, because obviously all our dates got cancelled. All the you know, all the ideas that we had about how we were going to make this new record and that we were going to be in the same room with Matt and, you know, have that kind of connection that we love to have musically. So definitely a little bit of trepidation at the beginning, and I think it fired on like a sense of like, well, we need to adapt now. Like we've just got to go for it. You know, these dates aren't happening. The way we were going to record the record isn't happening. So what can we actually control? You know, because you can't always control the external anyway, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's turned into a really positive time, to be honest. I think on a personal level, it's the most time I've ever had to kind of sit with myself. And I, you know, I've been talking about this a lot because I love touring and I love all the variety and the energy that it throws into the creative process. But I feel like I've let a lot of my, you know, I haven't really had a lot of time to really sit with myself and think about where I'm at in my life at certain stages. And you cover up a lot of stuff instead of like really tackling them head on. So you think you're in the moment, you know, which tour obviously throws up a lot of those feelings of like, you know, I'm right here, I'm very alive and I'm energized.
Sure.
But you can't truly be in the moment if there's a lot of stuff under the surface that's kind of holding you back from really properly enjoying it. You know, I feel like a weight has lifted through the writing of this record, and where I've really had to, you know, address some stuff. And it's an album about that kind of growth and that transformation where you bring your power back to you. So, yeah, it started off a bit shaky, you know, but it's actually turned into something really positive for us as a band, I think, and in terms of the creativity that it's created.
It's been really interesting. I've probably recorded maybe 200 of these during lockdown, and every single musician has kind of echoed that that statement of like, at first it was negative and then it was nice to kind of not be touring and have that moment. And then something you said there that, like, you know, you wanted to be in the studio and feel that connection and that original energy. I really like the idea that the situation that thrust us into meant that you kind of had to be, you had to get a bit punk and a bit DIY and go, right, well, look, what tools have we got here to make a record? Like, what have we got? Let's see what we can do with that. And I think some really, really exciting stuff's going to come from that.
Yeah, I agree. I think sometimes, like you said, when you're pushed a little bit to the edge, you know, because when you if the touring's been the thing that's been supporting your business side of things, and then that all goes away, then you are pushed a little bit to, like, you know, you're having those conversations of like, all right, well, what the fuck are we going to do now? Do you know what I mean? Like, and I think sometimes when you're pushed a little bit to your limit, then I think there's, like you said, there's different directions that you can go with us. I think we just, like I said, it put a bit of a fire under our asses, and we were just kind of like, right, well, let's use what we have and how take, you know, make the most of this time. And that's not to undermine anybody, because I, you know, I've been really frightened for my mum. My mum's got COPD and she's in Wales, and, you know, there's been a, you know, really wanting to look after and make sure that she's isolating and making sure that she's all right. And there's obviously been some horrible stories of people losing, you know, people and people's health and all that sort of stuff. So I don't want to undermine all that, because compared to, you know, that compared to what's the positive that's come out of it, it's a little bit hard to kind of reflect on at the moment. But like you said, I think you've got to just work with what you've got sometimes, haven't you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, let's talk records.
And all right.
For track one, I'm going to ask you please to tell me the song that you regard as having the greatest ever intro. Now, I've seen that you've sent over a couple for some, and so that's all right. Don't stress. You can have some honourable mentions, all right? But I do want the definitive one. You can get a few off your chest, but I do want you to pick one.
I kind of, you know, with things like this, I kind of don't like to overthink it too much. It's like, you know, it's like what hits you as intuitively something that's really resonated with you. So the first thing I thought about was James Brown, because, like, you know, like, just such a, I don't know, just the intros to so many of his songs just have that. I think I like really confident intros. I think that's what I learned from this question, that kind of just full-on confidence and swagger, you know. So, you know, you can't really beat with his intro to The Boss, you know, in terms of just the actual counting, you know. It's not a regular 1-2, it's a 1-2 get down. And then what follows it musically, just how fucking tight and how good all those instruments are together, and you kind of really feel him as a band leader, just kind of keeping everything in check. He's just one of those rare talents, I suppose, that could do everything.
He was famously quite ferocious, wasn't he, apparently? Like, I think people would get fined if they'd, like, drop beats and things like that. I think he was quite a taskmaster.
Yeah, and, you know, it's always... Sometimes you hear stories about people in the personal side of things and how that's been quite negative. You know, and I don't know a lot about the James Brown backstory and what, you know, I know little bits, and you never know unless you've fucking been there anyway. But there is something about that, that strength in music, you know, really feeling like somebody has followed their own path and created exactly what they wanted to make at every step and has been bold. You know, I do like
that. Oh, he done that.
Definitely, right?
Absolutely.
Totally. You know. And then the other one I was farting around with, wasn't it? Was it Elvis Costello and Lipstick Vogue, which has just got, like, the nicest combination of drums and bass ever, you know, attractions coming together. So, I don't know. But we'll stick with James Brown if you...
You're going for James Brown?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, in regards to intros, obviously we're going to talk about the new record a little bit later. But if we look at when your band first formed and the way that people listen to music then, it's probably quite different to how lots of people listen to music now. Mm-hmm. And with that in mind, and considering the way that I watch my children's thumbs on their screens, they move very, very quickly and their attention spans seem to be getting smaller. Mm-hmm. And I like the fact that you just alluded to the fact that you like a confident intro. The fact that it appears that commercial pop music, the songs are getting shorter, it's like straight in with a chorus, and it's like, it feels that, like, people are playing ball with the way that people are ingesting their music now. So with that in mind, I want to know, when the Joy Formidable make a new record, is that ever a consideration?
Mm-hmm. No, I guess towards it's, you know, I mean, when we released our first record, I think what the intro was probably like 2 minutes and the whole song was 8, you know, and that was the first song on the first record. I'm sure, like, we were on a fucking major label back then, so they were probably, like, you know, crying, you know. They never questioned it, because I think they kind of knew that, you know, we had towards it, you know, the integrity of the music is the most important thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, sometimes I'm like, oh, whatever, use whatever fucking photo you want, or, you know, of that or whatever. But when it comes to album, you know, what's going on your album and the track listing and that, I think that should really be between, you know, the members of the band or the writers even. So no, it doesn't come into it for us at all. I think we've always just liked being very honest to what we feel like the song or the the vibe at the time has been, you know, like Hitch is, I listen back to Hitch now, which was our third record, and I find parts of it, like, it's a bit of a hard listen, you know, I kind of feel like the three of us are back in the, you know, in our, in the house that it was my childhood house that we ended up recording. We recorded very live, you know, we just kind of like pressed record and let everything, you know, all mistakes and all kind of end up getting chronicled. But sometimes listen back to that, I'm like, oh, come on, fellas, get to the point. Like, you know, but it was a moment in time, you know, and that's just probably me being major critical, because I think that album does breathe from a performance side of, you know, performance place as well. So no, fuck it. I mean, you can't, again, it's a difficult one with that, because you're going to end up with a lot of just homogenous shite, aren't you? You know, like, it's already bad enough. It's like the last couple of songs prior to this record, you know, we were on Earth. You know, you go to radio in America, and I understand the premise of the radio edit has been going for years, hasn't it? Like, oh, we got to trim and all that. And even that is sometimes a bit of a tough thing to swallow. But, you know, on the last record, they were saying things like, fucking turn the distortions down on your guitars, you know?
No way.
Seriously, man. Like, and that's like, fuck off. So, you know, we sent new copies with the guitars turned up, and nobody noticed. So it's like,
wow.
You know, that's a line, isn't it? That's when you start getting into like, there's a trend that's controlling the artistry, whereas it's normally been the artist who's the one who's in power, isn't it? We're meant to be the ones who are like, you know, soundtracking where we're at in history and socially, and, you know, leading the way. You know, it shouldn't be happening from a kind of a very safe, you know, nobody rock the boat. Let's all package it up like this so the fucking computers can make music. Let's make it fit to the algorithm.
Totally.
It's like, fuck totally. Off.
I find it really, really strange. Like, I really do. And it was nice when you were saying about, you know, putting the track listing together. You said that, you know, that's really a really important thing to do as a band. And the fact, you know, I've spoke to artists on this podcast that are kind of aware and seem to be quite happy with the fact that, oh, well, you know, they're not going to necessarily listen to the album. They're going to cherry pick tracks from iTunes. And I find that fucking terrifying that an artist wouldn't want their record. I hope I'm not just coming across like, you know, Grandad Stew here and how it was in my day. But for me, I do think a record should be a piece of art, a body of work, and should be, that track should be put together as that artist wanted them tracks to be heard. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, I absolutely do. It's the same with a fucking movie, isn't it? You know, if you're like a really thoughtful, you know, movie maker, and you're telling this whole story, you don't want somebody to just watch the fucking trailer, do you? Do you know what I mean? You just spend like all this time creating, weaving this storyline and these characters and all the work that goes behind it. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it doesn't take 2 seconds to make an album. Do you know what I mean? Maybe it's a quicker process if you have a formula or something that you can like fucking do. But in terms of actually the craft of actually learning to play an instrument to begin with and be able to perform that and bring all the instrumentation together, it doesn't take 2 minutes. So we shouldn't be treating it like it's just, you know, I was ranting, this is so off, just kind of a bit of a digression, but I was ranting, sometimes I go for a run in the gym, and they were playing this fucking program called HGTV. It's like all property renovation bullshit, aspirational shit on American television. And they were melting people's vinyl records, you know, like melting them, and so that they could make something with them. And they were laughing at it, you know, like, oh, wow, this is cheap to melt. These records only cost a couple of dollars. I was getting so angry. I was like going, fuck off, that took me 12 months of my life to make that, you know. So, yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, that whole culture of like that, you know, this seemingly doesn't really, you know, this seems very quick and easy to make and produce.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the value that it deserves to have.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, I'm going to take you back. Track two. The first song that you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please.
Oh, man. Well, I was thinking about this, about my, you know, first heartbreak that you have. So I think I was in high school, and me scummed boyfriend ran off with some chick from another school. I lived up in the countryside in North Wales. So I used to, when I was in high school, by the time I had a little, I'd saved up enough money to buy myself a little Ford Fiesta. And I remember I had a soundtrack at the time that was just all about, you know, it was like when your heart's first been broken. I had a lot of The Cure and The Smiths on it. And it had a track by, the Walker Brothers didn't write it, did they? I think it was Tom Rush that wrote No Regrets, but I was listening to the version that the Walker Brothers had recorded. You know, it's a real, you know, it's kind of a really emotional kind of like, you know, I don't want you anymore.
God, that's heavy music for a teenager's breakup. Oh, I need some Walker Brothers. This'll work. God.
Anyway, yeah, that and the Smiths just on repeat. Yeah, the first love, right? That first heartbreak, man. It's a hard one.
Oh, it really is. I can vividly remember driving home from Romford in Essex after getting me heartbroken for the first time, and Heroes by Bowie come on me cassette player in my car in my shitty Ford Escort. I was bawling my eyes out driving down these country lanes. It's ridiculous. Oh,
totally. That's like same shared experience for exactly that. You bastard.
So I'm going to ask, because normally this kind of pops up, this question, because a lot of people choose the Smiths. And what? I'm a ridiculously huge Smiths fan. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, like so many of us, an angst-ridden teen, and Morrissey said all the right things at all the right time. What do you make of, like, what's happened to, someone broke Morrissey. It, like, a little bit of me's died inside. Like, I just think, oh, what? I mean, don't worry, Johnny Marr's still cool as fuck.
Yeah, he's lovely. But, like, yeah, he's great. Definitely, that's all I hang on to now as well. I just think
that's all we've got.
Johnny's still doing it. It's all right. I can still listen to it. You know, it's the same for me as well. Like, you know, sometimes when you get asked to choose tracks and things like that, the Smiths were a huge part for me growing up. So I don't like to censor that now. Do you know what I mean? Like, because... Yeah. They were, I mean, you can't really, it's like what we were saying before about being able to, can you extract the kind of the who the person is to the music? If the music is really amazing and impactive and emotive and, you know, tells a story that you believe in, can you separate that out from the person who's made it and where they're at now in a, you know, in a different chapter of their life? So I still talk about my love for those Smiths records and those songs, but you know, it feels like just a new level of like controversy, doesn't it, in a way? Like, I actually have quite a few links to his management and stuff like that, and it feels like it's, you know, like how he's always kind of enjoyed that controversial element anyway. He's always liked kind
100%.
Of 100%. Which can be used for good, or it can kind of be quite empty, can't it? You know, like it can just be saying a load of shit just so that somebody writes about you. I would have liked, I think the only thing that fell short for me was embracing it all with a bit more love, where he could actually like, I think that's the thing. I always associated the Smiths with the kind of like some sort of more loving kind of embracing difference and, you know, and misfits and all that, you know, but all that side of things. So yeah, that's the saddest thing of, you know, because I don't know, I don't really know what even Morrissey believes deep down either. Yeah. That's the sense I get.
Yeah. I guess that's one of the things that has always been something that's drawn people to him, and that, because nobody knows him, nobody knows anything about him. And that in this day and age is very rare, that, you know, everybody's life's all over the internet, and yeah, people still don't really know a lot about him, and I think that's quite interesting. But I just wish some of the stuff that he does say now, like, just doesn't come out the way that it's been coming out, because it's a little bit disappointing. Listen up, I've only got another new sponsor, Egg Fried. It's this super cool clothing label, and if you're into sort of skating and street art and gigging and kind of like really cool art and throwing a little bit of Asian culture and the designer's kind of weird sense of humour in the mix, then you're pretty much there with the wonderful world that is eggfried.com. Now, they do these amazing punchy kind of graphic tees, hoodies and sweatshirts, beautiful art prints, as well as this, they have a denim range, all handmade in-house, all supporting the slow fashion movement. Not only that, they've given you a discount code, 10% off when you head over to eggfried.com. Just use the code EGGSALAD, E-G-G-S-A-L-A-D, save 10%. Go and get lost in the world of Egg Fried. Also, they've got a new kids range, and it's called Small Fried, and it's super cool, super cute. And again, it's all over there in this wonderful world. Go and get involved at eggfried.com. Okay, well, we're talking formative years, and so I'm going to say for track three, Ritzy, will you please tell me the song that reminds you of your time at school, please?
I've got photographic evidence of this one because I remember going on school trips and there's like pictures of me when I was a kid, and I had always had these big, you know, I was always sat by myself, even though I'd had friends, you know, but I used to really enjoy when we went driving anywhere or went on a school, you know, outing or whatever. There's loads of pictures of me and I've always got my headphones on. I don't know, I had a little Sony thing or something. And every time I look at those pictures, I have a feeling that I was just playing The Cure on a loop, you know. And I think even though it's not one of my favourite songs now, you know, I think there's other songs that are a bit more sophisticated and better. But I think back then I was always listening to Friday I'm in Love by The Cure, just because yeah. I like the vibe of it and the tempo. And I like the video with the, you know, when you were little, I like the video with the flying pig. You know, wow. There's like a freedom and a feel-good factor to it that was really infectious to me when I was a kid, so...
It's a perfect pop record, isn't it?
It is.
It's just pure pop, and it's brilliant. And you know, as you say, I think there's definitely some other Cure records out there that are maybe a little more weighty, that are just a little bit more you can get lost in. But yeah, I think
it's a couple of
snake bites at your local indie disco, that one delivers Friday I'm in Love, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So have the Cure been quite an important band for you?
Yeah, and. You know, when they asked us to play, he's reached out a couple of times, you know, like, I feel like I take things in my, you know, I'm dreadful with faces, first of all. I think I've got that thing where you can't actually recognise people's faces sometimes. So I never get very starstruck, or, you know what I mean? Because I can never remember anybody. I walk around, you can be in a festival or something, I never know who anybody is, do you know what I mean? I'm just... So, you know, my bandmates take the piss out of me all the time. They're like, that's Kylie Minogue that you were just talking to. I'm like, no. I'm just like, no idea. It's all right.
Oh, amazing.
You know, so I've definitely got a bit of that going through just in general. And I don't know, I like the measure of who people are to you in that moment is probably more important than being like, you know, overtaken by the musical legacy. But I think that's the only one where I've gone, fucking hell, like, he's just emailed me, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, that. What'd you write back?
God, that's a moment, isn't it?
Totally. I don't know what to write back. I'll say thank you, you know? But he's been really lovely, you know. He's invited us to, he was curating Meltdown Festival, and he invited us to play that. And then we did the Glasgow Summer Sessions that he was curating as well. And then we did Pasadena with him, which was one of our last festivals in 2019. So, it's kind of been a bit bewildering, that, to me. I mean, lovely. Yeah. Really strange. I mean, they're still... Not that it has to get worse as you get older, but I mean, they are really good live. You know, like, I'd not seen them before, but fucking hell, man, they are on it, you know?
I've seen them a lot. I see them on the Wish Tour when Friday I'm in Love come out. Yeah. That was the first time I see them. But I saw them probably maybe 3 years ago at Hyde Park, and they'd done like a kind of best of.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, fucking hell. It was like, so many incredible records.
Like,
and one minute you're just literally crying on your mate's shoulder at Pictures of You, or, oh God, I don't know, love song. And then, yeah, you know, the next minute it's just like heaven, and you're just like, oh, you can just write beautiful.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Pop songs as well. It's like, oh, they were absolutely incredible that day. And yeah, what a band. Anyway, I want to talk about school. How did you find school?
Well, I think I enjoyed it. I went to a bilingual school in North Wales, so it was all the lessons were in Welsh. So I was doing things, and Welsh was my second language. So my mum and dad, my dad's from Rhyl and my mum's from Manchester, but my dad didn't speak Welsh. So found that quite interesting, because you were kind of learning this, what was already a second language, and then you were doing subjects like French, but you were doing it in the medium through Welsh. So you were doing learning French.
Wow, yeah.
In Welsh, so like he's like a double head fuck, you know.
Wow.
Yeah. But it had a lovely vibe to the school. Lovely morality running through it. It wasn't much bullying and that. I feel like you were allowed to develop into the individual that you wanted to be, and you know, there was a politeness and morality, like I said, that ran through it all. It wasn't a religious school, just kind of quite a sweet, small school in this mould in North Wales. So I had a happy time, you know. It was like, just kind of got into, I wouldn't say, like, I got into subjects that I liked there, like English, went on to do, English in uni and stuff, and got to dabble in music, but it wasn't, I think a lot of my musical side was happening at home. It wasn't necessarily, at school.
With that in mind, what kind of records were you being exposed to at home? What was on the stereo?
I was very lucky. My mum and dad were massive record collectors. So we had this, they bought this old, like, Calvinistic, it's a Calvinistic manse that's in the middle of nowhere in North Wales. And they bought it when they first got married, and they'd been kind of like doing it up. You know, it was one of those houses when you're growing up that's constantly being done up, but you know that it's never going to get done up. It's just,
yeah,
it's what it is. But it was, we had no neighbours. So, and they had this big record collection. So like, I think when I was growing up, they had about 2000 vinyl, and they had it it was all in alphabetical order because they're kind of nerdy. So I never really bought, I didn't really have the motivation to go out and buy a lot of my own records.
Yeah.
Because there was anything there, you'd say to dad, I'd say to my mum and dad, oh, you got anything by Van Morrison, And it just, they'd pull the entire back catalogue out,
Wow.
And it, just like a lot of music being played. And I'm glad, and we didn't have neighbours. So
yeah,
even though I was an only child, I feel like the house was never, it was always such a loud house because it was just music blaring all the time, you know.
Oh, how cool was that? Yeah, that's great.
It was lovely. I say sometimes that I could have easily been quite put off by music because I think sometimes when your parents are really passionate about something, it does sometimes make you go, oh, actually, I'm going to go and do sport or something. Do you know what I mean? I'm going to rebel and become a gymnast. But no, it was a lot of music in our house, and I was, you know, very lucky to have a pick of, and they had good taste, you know.
Yeah.
For the most.
Wow. You said earlier that your school was you know, it sounded like it's a pretty kind place to be, and they said, you know, you could be who you wanted to be, and did you know what you wanted to be at school? Did you know what you wanted to do when you grow up?
I thought I wanted to do something with animals, to be honest, because I idolized David Attenborough when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow, he gets to travel. I always liked the idea of traveling. I had a lot of travel books and adventure books when I was a kid. And the thought that you could go and travel and study animals at the same time, I was like, wow, that's the ideal. But then I failed me microscope class in biology. So I don't think David Attenborough would fail that. maybe I need to go and do something else, which in hindsight, it was only like one, you know, that's the thing when you're a kid sometimes, isn't it? Your perception of things, you know, it was only one tiny thing in the grand, you know, you can tell yourself, oh, I'm no good at biology now, I'm no good at math, you know. And sometimes it takes you being a little bit older to actually have the maturity to go, oh, that's just a blip. You know, of course you can get better at that. But I ended up doing English and stuff like that instead. So,
was you a confident young person?
I think my parents were very good at they weren't pushy parents at all. They were very, very, like, had very kind of hippie ideals of just, like, go and be the person you want to be kind and compassionate and go out there with goodwill, and whatever you want to do, we'll support you. So, and I think that is the root of it, isn't it? I never felt like there was a limit to what you could go and do, you know, but I don't think it was that. It wasn't my parents saying, like, go out and be this and be that. Yeah. It was just this very... a strong foundation of, like, anything's possible. You go out, the most important thing is be happy, but, you know, there's a lot to explore out there, and, you know, you can go and do it.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the confidence aside, you've chosen to get involved in one of the most brutal and cutthroat industries in the world. And the confidence... I mean, we'll get back onto confidence with performing a little later, but I want to ask you about drive. And would you say that you're a driven person?
I am when it's something that really excites me or I'm really passionate about. I think it's important to... Well... My bandmate was here, he'd be going, of course you're like a fucking scrappy dude. I can hear his voice. When I'm passionate about something, I'm not very good at taking no for an answer, you know, like if something's really important to me, then I don't let it go very much. I think I'm quite resourceful, you know, like I think there's been plenty of times when, you know, like whack-a-mole or something. I feel like sometimes this industry has come along. Like, we got sued a few years ago, you know, and it felt like it was a big, like, we got a big mallet to the head. Like, fuck off. And I feel like it could have been quite easy at that point to say, you know what, this is too stressful. Like, go and do something else, you know, for a bit. But it was like, I don't know, I think we're pretty good at, I think all of us are pretty tenacious as individuals. Like, when we really believe in something. And the fact that we've worked so hard as the three of us together creatively, you know, working hard, that's a difficult thing to say because it doesn't feel like work sometimes, but we've created something together over a lot of years that's very meaningful for us. So I don't, you know, moments like that when you feel like, you know, some big, nasty, rotten corporate thing wants to take you down. There's definitely something. I think I've got a very strong sense of justice sometimes that makes me really, like, dig in, you know, where I'm like, nah. No. Fight this one.
Absolutely. Track four. Richie, I'm going to ask you to tell me the first song you remember buying from a record shop, please.
Well, like I mentioned, I didn't have to buy a lot of vinyl records. Mm. I was very lucky in that sense. But my dad, especially, used to like going to record fairs. So there was a big one in Manchester. I don't know if it still happens. It was at the Royal Exchange, I think. They used to have a big record fair there. And I'd saved up a bit and I thought, oh, I'll go and see if there's anything outside of my dad's taste that I would like. And I actually found a copy of the Drill EP by Radiohead, which was obviously like the first thing that they released. And I think it was probably overpriced even back then, you know. Yeah, I thought I'd treat myself. So that's the first thing that I bought for myself. The joke with it was, is that a few years later, I felt like it had got kind of absorbed into me, mum and dad's record collection, and I still haven't been able to find it. So, like, and this happened quite quickly after buying it. Within about 18 months of buying it, it had disappeared into, you know, into the 2000s. You're like, where's the return on my investment? It's fucking, I'm not going to find it for about, and I still haven't found it. And that's, you know, many years on. So,
God, yeah. Bet that's worth a few quid.
I wonder what it is worth now. I think I paid at the time. I don't even remember what year it was. It must have been in the end of the 90s somewhere.
92, I think that come out.
Yeah. I think it would have been maybe more like 96, 97 when I found it. And I think I paid like 40 quid for it or something like that. Like, it wow. felt like a lot at the time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to see. I don't, it's certain records are obviously kind of good investment. My dad's constantly, you know, every so often, because I don't want him to downsize his record collection, but occasionally we say things like, you know, you've got all this digitally now as well. Maybe you could, you know, you're talking about moving. And he's just like, no, it's all worth thousands. So
absolutely, like, totally agree.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't think that one record is worth thousands. But
the ongoing argument in my house is like, if we're out and about and we go somewhere new and there's like a little sort of secondhand record store, it's like, I can't walk past it. You can't, can you? You've just got to go in and have a look and a smell.
Yeah.
And and then my wife will always kind of go like, haven't you got enough? And you just think, that's not a thing. You can't say, have I got enough records? That's not an argument. So, but on that, I mean, sounds like you've got the coolest parents ever, by the way, taking you to record fairs when you were young. It's wonderful. But growing up, mm-hmm. you know, in them later years and then being in bands and then going to, you know, all possible places around the world with Time to Kill when you get there, how important have record shops been for you throughout your life?
Yeah, very. Like, it's the one thing if you have spare time in a city like you're describing, you know, which is rare sometimes, you know, you really notice when you do actually get time in to feel like you get to absorb a new place. You know, a lot of the time it's just like, wow, I've seen another venue. Do you know what I mean? So it's really special when you actually get a couple of days somewhere or you get in somewhere early and you can go and explore. But for a lot of the time that we were touring, Ridgeon and I didn't actually have a place to live because we made the first record in London and we shared a place together there. And then once the touring really kicked off, we kind of like, you know, moved out of there. And then we kind of lived just in suitcases, you know, for about 5 years, which is fine. Like, I'm definitely not moaning about it. It was, you know,
yeah.
It was a wonderful time. But I didn't have a record player then, you know. I had one of those awful little portable things that you can, you know, that you can plug in places, but the sound quality is shocking and depending on the type of vinyl you buy, it jumps and stuff like that. But I was still buying vinyl records. So when we got, we went through our Los Angeles, we have a storage unit and we've got fucking storage units all over the place, you know, like we're constantly going, where is everything? So when we went to LA and we were opening up some of our own suitcases. There was vinyl that we'd bought years ago, you know, and we'd not even opened because we didn't have anything to play it on.
So, oh, that's better than finding a fiver down the back of the sofa, that is.
I know. Yeah, it was amazing. So, yeah, always bought, like you said, even when it practically hasn't always been the best thing. I mean, when it's done properly from a musical point of view, from a mastering and mixing point of view, it sounds fantastic. And if you have the right system, and just from a very, I mean, I don't need to describe it, but just from a very tangible, like, artwork, here it all is. It feels like, you know, it's real somehow, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you really get to appreciate album artwork on vinyl as well.
Yeah, totally.
Let's move forward. Track 5, the song that soundtracked your year's clubbing, please.
Well, I used to go, have a fake ID and go to this place in. So North Wales wasn't exactly club central, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like there wasn't, you normally had to go out and go to Manchester or Liverpool, really. But there was this one place that was called the Buckley Tivoli that I think we just hit it. Even though we were a bit young, we kind of hit it at a perfect time because I think the guy who owned it, he had a lot of really good connections in music. I think he'd been a manager or something, and he just got all these bands that would normally skip North Wales, you know, and they'd like us to go and play in the major cities. He just used to get them all through, and they would play the Buckley Tivoli on a Wednesday night. That was the big party, which, you know, North Wales is so rural, just even having, I think it was just amazing that we even had that sort of musical focus at that time growing up. But
who did you see then?
Oh, loads of people. Oasis, Super Furry Animals, Eels, Catatonia. It was like loads of Britpop stuff when Shed 7 and some American bands that were coming through. There's a great artist called Nut.
She was great.
She was fantastic. Well, I've been looking for her stuff online or what she ended up doing.
I've got loads of, literally, that room behind me, I've got a lot of 7-inch singles from Nut.
Yeah.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
She came and played. There was just a lot of good stuff that came through, you know, came through the Buckley Tivoli, but they had a club night afterwards. So they had the band play, which is a band now you realise is like the worst gig in the world, which is call it disco loadout, you know. Like you find out that your fucking agent has booked you somewhere with a disco loadout, that's when you go, what? You know, because you're normally going to be carrying all your amps and stuff. People, fuck off, out my way. You know, this weighs fucking 200 pounds.
Oh, amazing.
So, Yeah, so they used to have a club night, and there was a lot of really good alternative dance stuff. And I love the Prodigy, you know, like I've been messing about with a solo record at the moment, and every so often I keep doing some stuff that sounds like singer-songwriter, like it's quite acoustic and lush and melodic. And then I go and I do something and it sounds like Nine Inch Nails meets the Prodigy. And I'm kind of like, how does this solo record, like, which one do I want to do, you know? So I think they were just so exciting and dangerous, you know? So I chose No Good by The Prodigy because, like, as soon as that, you know, that riff builds up, as soon as that came on, you know. Good. Yeah.
So good. They're from where I'm from. They're our hometown heroes. They're,
are they?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Fiercely proud of The Prodigy.
Yeah, amazing band.
Just before we move on, I want to ask you about a Welsh band, because when I asked Super Furries about this and they wasn't too sure, but there was a Welsh band around 97, 98 that my band played with a couple of times, and they were pretty much the reason why I decided to stop being in bands, because they were so fucking amazing live.
Right.
And we played with them. I'm going to try and pronounce this right. Club Eiferback.
Yep.
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 And they were called Terrace.
Oh, God, yeah. I remember Terrace.
Like, the front man was the most exciting thing I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
And they got I think they got an NME cover and a lot of hype, and then it just went. I just don't know what happened.
What happened with them? Because... oh, I'm trying to remember what track I had of theirs. Or I had
Cannibal Kids, Picture Show.
That's it. I'm trying to. Yeah. I can kind of see their artwork. I remember it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Terrace. Fucking hell. I wonder where they were. I wonder where they were from in Wales.
I think they were from Cardiff. They were managed by the guy from 60 Foot Dolls.
Oh, okay. Right. So like another Welsh band, because they had a bit of a lilt. Like, I was obsessed with Costello, Elvis Costello, when I was growing up, and then this band came out of Wales. They were called Ether. Do you remember them?
Yeah.
And he had a very similar delivery to Costello when he sang, you know, and some of the changes had a little bit of a Costello-esque. So I remember really liking them. They were meant to play the Tiv, actually, and they cancelled. And there was this band, I won't name them because I know some of them, but every time a band cancelled in the Tiv, this other band would come and play, like a local band would come and play. And the minute you'd get there and they wouldn't announce that the other band had cancelled, and then the minute they'd walk on stage, you'd be like, oh, fuck's sake. They're playing again.
Oh, that poor band. They must literally just see an army of people with like, fucking hell.
Every time we used to laugh about it, as soon as they walked on, you were like, oh. I want a refund. I've seen these.
Oh, wow. Okay, right. Well, it's weirdly apt that we've just been talking about the bands that we've been talking about and home, because for track six, I'm going to ask you to tell me a favourite artist from your home county, please.
Oh, well, I've chosen the Super Furry Animals because they're not quite from where I'm from. I'm from Flintshire, and I think they're a couple of counties over. But yeah. We'll let it's it fun. Go. It's fine, isn't it? They had a big.
Did you think it said country? Because all the other people that have been on this podcast have always thought it said country. So don't worry.
County. I guess the alarm of even the alarm are from Denbighshire. So and that's still one county over. Flintshire. I guess it would have been like Johnny from Coldplay is from there, but I don't really know. Right. I don't think I would have chosen Coldplay. No. Not being rude or anything, but
any opportunity to talk about Super Furries is welcome on this podcast.
Totally. They just had a huge influence growing up, you know, because they used to do a lot of like local shows. So they play at the Tiv, and then they put on a really good show in Bangor. They played the fucking hell, what was it? Was it a golf course or it was basically they put a big pop-up marquee in Bangor, which, you know, even though it's a university town, it doesn't always get a lot of live music in those neck of the woods. So
yeah.
You know, I had a lot of experience of seeing them live, and they're obviously extremely exciting live, as well as having the songs to actually back it up recorded as well.
Yeah.
So, and he's a really nice guy, Griff. You know, we've crossed paths quite a few times over the the years. So I thought with, you know, what's his name? David from Dat Bluggy. He died a couple of days ago or last week. So I thought I'd choose a tame lad, which was actually on Mung, Super Furry Animals, covering Dat Bluggy. And obviously Dat Bluggy, you know, incredibly important 80s band as well, growing up in Wales, very influential. So, A Tame Lad by, which is just a lovely love song in Welsh.
Absolutely.
Furries, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, for the last track, you get to play Tastemaker and DJ and turn someone onto something new. And so for that track, I'm going to ask you, please, to tell me the song that you think many people may not know that you would like them to hear.
Well, we were just deciding on who to go out on tour with, because I think we're going to start announcing some dates soon. And there's this band out of Los Angeles that I've been listening to quite a bit over the last few months. They're called Cuffed Up, and they have a song called French Exit. So I thought it might be nice to kind of play that and know that we're, you know, going to go out on tour with us. It's just a really great track. It's got a little bit of that kind of spoken, it's kind of quite spoken, the delivery of it, a bit of spoken word. It has a wall of sound, lovely guitars. Seem like really sweet people. I mean, we've been speaking a little bit. It's nice just before a tour, it's nice to kind of connect beforehand.
Yeah. You
know? We like to have a really good experience and be, you know, we've had bands that have taken us out and they've showed us a lot of love and kindness. So I think it's important, you know, to follow, you know, pass that on. We're looking forward to going out with them, you know. Hopefully they can come to the UK at some point. We haven't booked any UK dates just yet. I think we've got Focus Wales in October, but we're still trying to figure out, just want to be really thoughtful about going out and making sure that everybody can have a really fun, good experience. Yeah. You know, hasn't always, the thought of not interacting fully with an audience has been quite a difficult thing to accept, I suppose. So I suppose we're maybe waiting to see if we can actually, can we do hugs? I don't know. Do you know what I mean? We're a bunch of huggers. There's a lot of hugging goes on at Joy Formidable shows. You know?
Oh, that's lovely to hear. We put together a Spotify playlist to accompany the podcast with all of the songs that we've spoken about, so people can go and listen to them. And obviously we'll put some Joy Formidable on there as well. As we find ourselves hopefully entering into a time when we can hug again and we can go to shows, mm-hmm. And we can go to clubs and reconnect with people, with that in mind, what are you looking forward to most personally from this year, and what's going to be happening professionally?
Well, I'm excited about, like you said, about touring again and getting out there. We've been connecting a lot online with our, you know, with our fans, because we set up, the big thing that changed for us this year was we'd already had a music club that we'd set up in 2019, but the way that that's grown and evolved this year has kind of taken us a bit by surprise. Like, we've had a lot of people sign up, and then we've got this huge backstage area now where everything archival lives. You know, we've got a lot of new material on there, all our online shows, all that sort of stuff. And I think there's something there that I'm excited about, maybe bringing in into other bands' lives, maybe, like a little bit of that aesthetic. Because I think being able to keep some of your material back or your live shows and really still have, you know, those things still have value.
Yeah.
And create a community where people can come to you. I feel like even though technology has, you know, we could fucking talk forever about the pros and cons of technology on music, right? But I think one of the things, the negative side for me, is sometimes it's split artists across lots of different platforms. So nobody, you know, people are getting spread all over the place and they're not necessarily knowing where to directly support an artist that they really love.
Yeah.
And so this music club has been it's been a real big part of getting people to come back to us, and we kind of like can control the music that we're putting out, the quality of the shows that we're doing, all that sort of stuff. It's just been it's kind of what's kept us going this year. I won't lie. It's been a huge part of supporting us this year and being able to make this latest record. And I'm excited about sharing that to other bands. I think that's what I'd like. I think we're at this point where it feels like the music industry has been a bit disrupted, hasn't it, by the shows disappearing. But how do we disrupt it a little bit more? Because it wasn't really that easy prior to COVID for bands to be developed or sustain and have a career. And I like the thought of some of what we've created in having this area that a band can have that can bring, you know, their core fan base directly to them, you know. So who knows? That's one hope that maybe we can open that out to, you know, some more artists.
And where can people find out about that?
All on the website. Our website's just gone bonkers. It's www.thejoyformidable.com, and like we've really developed that. It's got loads of different little spaces. You'd have to see it. I can't put into words some of the stuff that we've done, because Matt, our drummer, is bonkers, you know, like most drummers are. But he's been doing the encore for every one of these online shows that we've been doing, and they're just very surreal, very exciting, very interesting, very creative. Yeah. But I can't really describe what he's been doing without it sounding like he's lost the plot. But it's all on the site. You'll be able to see it on the site, yeah.
Wonderful. Ritzy, you've been an absolute delight to do a top countdown of tracks with. Thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. It's been lovely to meet you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. There you go. See, that's why I was so happy and upbeat at the beginning doing the intro, because I just finished that lovely chat. How wonderful was she? Yes, exactly. Absolutely glorious. And that was a smashing chat. If that's your first time listening to this podcast, then go and explore the back catalogue, because there's more of it. There's probably 310 episodes. You can hear me talking to big old rock bands like the Foo Fighters and Motley Crue. And you can hear me talking to hip-hop bands such as... Are they hip-hop bands or hip-hop acts? I don't know what you call them. Public Enemy. I'll speak to Chuck D, absolute hero of mine. If you like you indie, then you can hear me talking to, as I mentioned, Super Furry Animals. Ritzy also mentioned Shed 7. You can hear me talking to Rick. And, yeah, stacks and stacks of indie bands. If you like your actors, then you can hear me talking to Maxine Peake, Joe Hartley, Amanda Abington, there's Michael Smiley, there's stacks. And if you want to laugh and you like some comedy, then I've spoken to comedians, James Acaster, Ed Gamble. There's loads. Go and have a rummage, and then you can find out about all of it at www.offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Right, I'm out of here. Thanks ever so much for listening. Be excellent to each other, and I'll see you next time. Much love. Bye-bye.
It's Off the Beat and Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whippin.